You're listening to Screen Heroes on the Heroes Podcast Network.
Well, hey, everybody. Welcome back to Screen Heroes, your TV and film podcast on the Heroes Podcast Network. I am your regular host, Derek, and I have my two lovely co-hosts with me, Ryan.
Hello.
And Ray.
Yep, that's me.
That is you. Welcome back, guys. This is episode 210, and this week we are finally getting around to the DCEU, the good with the bad. And what I mean by that is we've actually done this twice for the MCU. It was our very, very first episode, and it was we did a redo of it for our 200th episode. So now the DCEU, that's what we're going to be covering for our main topic here today. But before we do that, before we get into the nitty-gritty, we've got news to cover. Coincidentally, it's all DC news. So sorry if you wanted to hear other stuff. But let's start with just kind of a funny one that we can speculate about. With the Snyder Cut being officially announced, there's all these talks about like the Ayer cut of the Suicide Squad. Apparently, there is a Schumacher cut of Batman Forever that is 170 minutes long. Do you guys want to see a director's cut, a Schumacher cut of Batman Forever?
God help me, I do.
I'd say want is a strong word, but I mean, if it was on HBO Max, I would probably watch it. But I don't know that. I think I could proceed forward with my life not watching it and it never releasing and be okay. Rachel, it looks like the Man of Steel's delt is coming over onto your shoulder right now because of your mic.
That's where I want it.
Yeah. We all want that. Fight me for it.
So what you're missing there is we record this live. We stream it on Facebook in our Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/screenheroes. You can join us Tuesday nights. And we use Zoom right now for this. And our virtual backgrounds are sometimes pretty great. Ray has Henry Cavill as Superman with the mustache.
From the courtroom scene, if you're really trying to...
Yeah, that's how it should be.
Paint the picture, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not how it should be, but we can talk about that another time. Yeah, so 170-minute cut, three-hour cut almost of Batman Forever, which is the Jim Carrey Riddler and Tommy Lee Jones as Two-Face. So
that's the part that I want. Like, just, you know, a few hours of those two playing off each other, especially knowing that they, like, Tommy Lee Jones hated him. I just want to see that. I don't really care about Val Kilmer. He was serviceable, but, you know, those two were amazing.
That's what an actor always strives for, is serviceable.
Well, I mean, that's Val Kilmer's entire career.
Hey. True. Be very careful, Rachel.
Yeah. You guys want to name something stellar? Oscar-winning.
Tombstone.
The Doors and Tombstone. Wow.
Top Gun.
I mean, come on. Have you guys both seen The Doors?
Yeah,
I have not seen The Doors.
It's boring. I have fallen asleep like 8 times during it.
Oh, man. He's so good in that movie. If you like, I mean, you have to kind of like The Doors music to really enjoy the film, I think.
I only know Riders on the Storm because of Need for Speed Underground.
Well, it's in there. That song is certainly in there. All right, well, let's move on then. So additional DC news. We have two projects that are rumored to be, or reported, which apparently is stronger than a rumor, but still not confirmed, to be in development. These are a Zatanna film and a Constantine film, both of which are supposed to be separate from the Justice League Dark series that Bad Robot is heading up. Both of these would also be done by Bad Robot, which is part of J.J. Abrams' deal with Warner Brothers, but these would be separate stories that focus on the two characters. There may be crossover, that's always possible. But let's talk a little bit about these. What do you guys want to see from a Zatanna or Constantine film?
I want it to be the same film.
Yeah, that's basically what I was thinking too. They're such complementary characters. Having them each in their own film and not each other's films is kind of silly to me.
Yeah,
I just don't understand it. Now, by now, we've seen enough Constantine through the CW show, the movie. Well, you know, the show that was not originally on the CW is now on the CW and on the Seed, and then him on Legends in the animated series. We're familiar enough with Constantine. I think that Zatanna we don't know as well, and I think it would be tough for her to carry her own movie by herself. But I think having Constantine either as a secondary character or them just like as both primary characters would be the best way to go for sure.
Oh yeah.
Do either of you want to see Keanu Reeves's version of Constantine?
No.
Continue here.
I wouldn't be mad if it happened, but like it was fine. It just, I don't know. There was nothing so good about it that makes me really want it back. Like, you know, Ben Affleck as Batman, if somebody said, do you want him back? Then I would say yes, because he was a great Batman and he didn't get his due. Constantine, Keanu Reeves got his due. He got a whole movie to himself and nothing stood out enough to where I feel like I really need him back as Constantine.
I think it would be fun to have him back. I think it would, you know, bring some much needed continuity. We all know that they're not going to have Matt Ryan do it.
You know, which is sad because he's very good.
He is fantastic. Oh my God. I adore him. So obviously the biggest likelihood is that they're going to recast and it'll be a completely new person altogether. And that could be really cool, but seeing Keanu back would be really fun as well.
Fair enough.
What about you, Derek? You're not going to answer your own question?
I'll answer it. I mean, I think I'd be fine either way. It depends on, of course, if the new person is good at it, right? Like that would be the real catch is, you know, if you could end up replacing the, you know, Keanu Reeves with somebody who's not as good, or you could replace him with somebody who's even better. So, you know, I think that I'd be fine either way as long as it ends up being decent. You know, the Constantine film that Keanu Reeves did is so far removed from the DCEU, especially, let alone comic book movies in general. You know, it predates the MCU. And so I think it's okay to move on from that. But of course, you know, there's all this talk of Michael Keaton returning as Batman and Flashpoint, and that brings you all the way back to 1989 and DC maybe trying to do some type of convergence storyline with their movies that we can dovetail into the next news piece, which is that there are rumors, not reports, but rumors that there will be a Justice League Rebirth film that will be landing at some time in the future. And my thought on this, before I pass it to you guys, is that this is a perfect idea for the post-Flashpoint movie. So you go through, you get the Snyder Cut, Snyder gets to tell that entire story, you do Flashpoint, which gets to do whatever changes they want to make, right? And then you bring in this Rebirth. And so if you want to keep Gal and Fisher and Ezra Miller and Jason Momoa and bring back Henry Cavill, but replace Ben Affleck with Pattinson, then you can do that with a Rebirth style film. It's post Flashpoint. So lots of things can change. Anything they want could change. So I think it's a really smart
idea. Does your
idea.
Perfect Justice League not have Shazam in it? Is that what I was just getting from that conversation?
Aww.
It's like the only one you didn't mention.
It's not the only one I didn't mention, but he's the only one who hasn't been included in any of the team ups yet.
His movie was most referential of all of them to the bigger universe. So
I just don't know if what their plans are going to be with that, right? Like we're supposed to see a Shazam 2, but we're also supposed to see a Black Adam, and Black Adam isn't even supposed to meet Shazam until maybe a Shazam 3, and maybe Superman is going to be in Shazam 2. So like I don't know what's going on there. I would love for Zachary Levi Shazam to show up again and again and again, because I think it's one of the greatest
in everything choices,
like ever. He's wonderful.
And bring him into Doom Patrol. I want to bring him in Doom Patrol.
Oh, that'd be so. Oh man, so good. So that would be wonderful. It'd be great. But I also wouldn't be surprised if they keep him on his own track for now. you know, kind of like they've done with, you know, the Suicide Squad characters. Like, you've got Harley and you've got the Birds of Prey, and other than the small Batman cameo in the first Suicide Squad movie, that's still been kept fairly separate.
Yes. I don't know. I think it's a good idea for, you know, right now they're struggling. And, you know, a full reset like that would probably be their best bet. But we'll talk about it tonight, but we all know Warner Brothers does not handle things exceptionally well in general. Their ideas seem good in theory, and then their execution is piss poor. So, you know, I don't know. It's tough to put any faith into that decision.
Ray, what are your thoughts?
This is a total wait-and-see situation for me. If I pass judgment too soon, it'll probably come back to bite me. So I don't have a lot of thoughts on this. It could be really good. It could also be really bad. So I'm just withholding, and we'll see. We will see.
Okay, fair enough. So before we really start tying things completely into the DCEU, everything else we've talked about is speculative whether or not it'll be tied in, we have some news on the Stargirl TV show. So Stargirl is a new show. It was dual released on DC Universe as well as the CW, and its first season is just wrapping up. It's been renewed for season two, which, you know, is always a good thing. You know, it means these actors get and the cast and crew get to keep working together, and we have a new DC superhero that's moving forward. However, in the absolute just confusing, convoluted disaster that is DC Universe, she will not be returning to DC Universe. Instead, Stargirl is moving directly to the CW for season two. I mean, I'm not surprised by this. Are either of you surprised by this?
Not in the slightest.
No, not surprised. I think that all the shows are going to be moving. I would imagine when DC announces, or Warner Brothers announces Doom Patrol season three, which seems inevitable at this point, that it will only be on HBO Max. And Titans will, I'm guessing. Have they even announced a season three for Titans?
I thought it was greenlit, but I don't know that it ever entered production.
Okay. Well, I mean, if that's the case, then, you know, if they haven't announced it, then it wouldn't surprise me if they announced it as a dual release and then season four is primarily on HBO Max. So, I mean, I think that DC Universe are just trying to milk for as long as they can. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's fine. I get it. The almighty dollar rules the world, so I feel bad for people like you guys though that are stuck with a service that seems basically useless at this point.
Well, we don't have it anymore, actually.
Oh, okay.
When our year was up, we did not renew it, which has been a bummer because we really wanted to watch season two of Harlequin, but that's going to be coming to HBO Max, so we'll just watch it when it lands there.
Mm-hmm.
We did get a question in chat about whether or not Stargirl will be part of the Arrowverse, and yeah, so Ryan, you just answered this in the chat itself, but I'll say it for everyone listening. Technically, everything's in the Arrowverse, right? Because DC just has this multiverse going on, and everything is in the same space-time continuum. Now, the spirit of the question, will she show up with the Arrowverse characters? I'm going to go ahead and say at this point, yeah, she
yes.
will. Right? Will it be necessarily in her season two? Maybe not. They might wait another year. Maybe she shows up in somebody else's show in a crossover, which they've done many times. Mm-hmm. But she will absolutely meet these other characters at some point in the near future. It's just a waste not to. As far as how often, will just depend on where the shooting takes place. The Arrowverse shows mainly shoot in Toronto. That was a big issue with Supergirl. They had to move production to Toronto to make that type of thing easier. I don't know where Stargirl currently shoots, but if it's not Toronto, it will be eventually. So there you go. All right. So let's cover just a couple more pieces of DC news before we take our break. And these are specifically to the Snyder Cut. So we're learning more and more about what will or will not be in the Snyder Cut. First, it looks like Junkie XL will be returning for the Snyder Cut. Originally, Junkie XL was supposed to be the composer for Justice League. He did BVS, for example.
Didn't Whedon fire him?
I don't know that Whedon made the call, but he was replaced with Danny Elfman. I don't know.
Which is not a terrible replacement. I mean, Danny Elfman is pretty great. but.
Yeah, I think it's a tonal issue again, right? Like Danny Elfman really fits the tone of Whedon, right? Brighter, a little bit campier, kind of silly. Whereas Junkie XL is a lot harder. It's more rock heavy. It's more intense, which fits the tone of BVS. So he's returning. I'm happy about this because I think other opinions aside on BVS, I think the score is awesome. I really like XL's work. And so I'm really excited to hear what he has to do for Justice League.
Well, the Wonder Woman theme alone that he created is pretty epic, and it just hangs in your head hours after you hear it.
It's true. It's probably the most iconic theme in the DCEU. Mm-hmm. But then also, you know, some of the things I did like the score of Justice League. So, you know, using tones from the original Batman score and the original Superman scores, you know, things like that, and taking inspiration from that was pretty great. And mm-hmm. hearing those, you know, tones that we all know so well, you know, you're right though. It is a tonal issue. And I think that if Snyder wanted Junkie XL, then that's who needs to be doing it. So I think they made the right choice.
And it's not like Danny Elfman gets canceled out or unpaid or anything like
that. Yeah. It doesn't. Yeah. He still made his money and did his thing. And,
yeah,
we still have that score. It still exists.
Exactly. His soundtrack's still out there.
Mm-hmm. And that version of the movie will still be out there. You know,
unfortunately.
It's not like that version's going to go away. Unless for some reason the Snyder Cut is like beloved world around or something like that. I can't imagine they're just going to remove the original theatrical release of this film.
Right.
A couple other details that we know. So the original Steppenwolf design will be returning to the movie. They've already started VFX work on completing the film. And according to reports, according to Snyder, this is going to be completely his vision of the film with no studio compromises, which is a pretty bold statement considering, you know, that he can't just bring all the actors back into the studio to shoot pickups or anything like that. I mean, he seems pretty happy. Snyder seems pretty jazzed. It's the happiest he's seemed on social media in quite some time.
Yeah, that's good news. It's usually a studio won't give that much freedom, but I guess when you've already had a failed movie and you know, you're releasing straight to a streaming service, it's, you know, you can do things like that. And that's something that we couldn't have done, you know, 15 years ago. So it's an interesting change in our entertainment.
Mm-hmm. And there's also reports that we're going to get a new teaser of the cut of the film before DC's online event, DC FanCon, I think is what it's
Fandome.
Called. Fandome, thank you. DC Fandome. We're supposed to get this before that. So that's a little surprising. You'd think they'd want to save some big reveal stuff for that event, and maybe they will.
They are. There's a lot of rumors circulating about somebody leaked on Reddit the all the announcements for the DC Fandome. I was going to send it to you guys, but I don't buy it. If it's even half true, then it would blow everybody's mind.
Yeah.
So,
well, you guys know how
if they're releasing this ahead of the time, it signifies they probably have better announcements to have during the event. So, something to look forward to for sure.
Hmm. The last piece of news I want to touch on actually broke today, where Warner Brothers is considering doing an animated Amazon's series based off of Wonder Woman. So this would, of course, you know, take place in Themyscira, and it would be animated, I assume, an HBO Max production, I imagine. I don't know where else it would go at this point. But what do you guys think? Do you like that idea? Would you rather see it in live action? Any thoughts?
No, I think it would be really cool in animation. I just, as awesome as a Themyscira show would be, I think that a live action version would draw too many comparisons to Xena and not be able to stand on its own. Plus, at some point, like, you have to bring Wonder Woman into it, and I just don't know Gal is going to be able to do that. So an animation thing is, it's a way to separate, it's a way to continue the DCEU in a broader spectrum, as well as just make it easier for Gal to make appearances.
I just hope it's the same tone as Teen Titans Go.
Yes.
I mean, honestly, if they take the same approach to this as they do for the Harlequin cartoon, it could be pretty spectacular. The Harlequin cartoon's not made for kids. It's made for an older audience, and they can be a little edgier. They can be a little more intense. And I think that premium streaming services need that kind of content. I mean, look at Doom Patrol. Doom Patrol is, I think, as adult as DC has gotten so far. And so if this last week's episode is not a good example, I don't know what is. So that's where I stand.
I'm with you.
All right. Well, is there any other news that you guys want to cover before we take our break?
You didn't want to talk about the reports about Whedon that have come out, about his treatment of actors on Justice League and all that stuff?
Or the news about The Boys, also a DC thing?
Sure, sure. I just figured we were, you know, nearing a midway point here, but we can do that. Let's talk Whedon. So Ray Fisher came out and retracted any support that he had for Joss Whedon in the original theatrical version of Justice League after Snyder's departure. Since then, things have gotten a little intense, with the accusations being pretty hardcore. Not a lot of specifics, but according to Fisher, there's an NDA involved that limits what he can and cannot talk about publicly while he's under contract with Warner Brothers, which he still is. What do you guys think about this? Are you surprised? Is there something you'd like to see done?
I mean, I just want people to get off Whedon's jock. You know, he did some good stuff, but I think that he's always been not a great, I don't know. He's not been great towards women. And it's funny because that was basically what his whole foundation was. Buffy and Dollhouse, right? I might be mistaken. Yeah. I'm not a big Whedon fan, but, you know, there were reports that from multiple sources that Gal Gadot did not want to do the scene in Justice League where Flash falls onto her chest. And so they had to get her stunt double to do it. And that's why you never see her face in that scene. And then that they locked, it was kind of ambiguous, the wording. They either locked Gal or her stunt woman in a room until she agreed to do it or something like that. It was a very inappropriate way of trying to make something happen, however it went down. And, you know, we're all hearing this third party, so it's always tough to judge without being there. But the way it was worded definitely made it sound like it was pretty terrible. So I don't know how he could make that feel better. And it's not just him. It's Jeff Johns, too. And there's one other guy. I can't remember his name. But that just kind of knew the stuff was going on with Whedon and still let it happen. So, you know, Whedon may have been the direct face for it, but some of the other guys that are pretty big in the DC world knew about it and just let it go, and they should be held accountable as well.
I agree. Honestly, there's only been a couple of women behind Whedon this whole time, and, you know, we just focus on Buffy and great female characters because Sarah Michelle Gellar has kind of stood behind him this whole time. But you look at reports from other actors, Jewel State, Amy Acker, Gina Torres, and they don't always have the nicest things to say about him. Similar situations. You know, Eliza Dushku pointed out how sexual he made Buffy and Faith in the Buffy show. And Whedon was like, no, you're reading into it. You just want to be a lesbian. And, you know, years later, Whedon rewatched it and he was like, oh my God, I did. So Whedon should not be like the end all be all of any geeks like fandom. He's a dude. He's made some mistakes, and it doesn't seem like he's learning from them. He's just creating new mistakes. So I'm not saying like we need to cancel Whedon, but we definitely need to stop praising him. That's for damn sure.
But would it really affect you if we did cancel Whedon?
Probably not. Like, honestly, aside from Justice League, he hasn't done much in the last few years. Like, I'm not losing out. His content that he's already made is still there. I can still watch it.
Well, and one of the other things that came out, and I'll touch on Geoff Johns in a second too, but Whedon was apparently also pretty insulting towards not just Snyder, but anybody who was doing work with Snyder's vision of the film to the crew that like did that work.
Yeah.
And it's pretty messed up.
Yeah. He was essentially insulting their work to their faces in a leadership role, you know, as the director on set. And, you know, like Snyder, don't like Snyder, he was going through some pretty terrible personal stuff that I would hope nobody would ever have to go through. Maybe cut the guy some slack. You know, he got fired. You got the job. You're Joss Whedon. If you still need to like knock down somebody else to make yourself feel better, that's a huge problem. And to do that to the crew, people who worked insane hours on, you know, little pay because they're not the A-list stars, they're not the head director, put months and months of work into something that you didn't like, doesn't mean you have to insult them to their faces while they're working for you. I don't want that to be missed. Like, yeah, he the predatory stuff is very important, but this is also important. Insulting what people put time and effort into is not good.
What about Geoff Johns, Derek?
Well, so the reports are he just basically enabled it, Whedon to just do whatever. And the reports don't, you know, specifically say that Johns did anything himself other than just like not put a stop to anything. And, you know, it's just it's disappointing because Johns is one of the things that he's known for is essentially saving the Green Lantern franchise from cancellation. Green Lantern was not doing particularly well. It had gotten kind of stale. And he revived it. He created what we now know as the emotional spectrum, and some of the greatest storylines in modern Green Lantern times is from him. To know that like his great comic book works are centered around an entire character whose main power is the power of will, for him to not have the willpower to do the right thing to a studio that he essentially runs is really discouraging.
I'm going to be honest, I kind of expected you to stand up. I thought you were leading into standing up for him and saying that, well, he didn't do anything, so, you know. But, yeah, I'm glad you – I know Green Lantern means a lot to you. And everything I heard about Geoff Johns and that I knew about Geoff Johns came from you and Rachel. So, I mean, as far as I was concerned, he seemed like an awesome dude for DC. But, you know, I know it must be heartbreaking for you to hear all this with somebody that was probably somewhat close to a hero for you, saved the character that that's now probably your favorite character. And, you know, so
I'm going to say like one thing about Geoff Johns, and it may be slightly related, unrelated. I'm not quite sure, but yes, he has worked on quite a few comics, but he really is. He got his push because Blackest Night in like 2008, 2009, I think that's about the time, outsold every other comic. Everybody wanted it. Everybody bought the offshoots, and it was a huge event. Like, before that, I know some of my nerd friends were a little ashamed to admit that they liked Green Lantern. And afterwards, like, it made everybody a Green Lantern fan, which is huge. But he ended up getting promoted and he oversaw TV shows all of a sudden and movies. And like, I just feel like that's a little bit white guy failing upward kind of thing to a certain degree. Cause like Gail Simone has made a ton of comics popular for DC, and you know, she's still writing for DC. They don't have her behind the scenes or anything. So there's just a lot of people who aren't as famous but have made DC just as much money that could easily have Geoff Johns's job.
Probably should, in all likelihood.
After all this, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, other people should have his job.
Yeah, it's definitely disappointing. And like, look, if you're on the same level with somebody, or you're below somebody and you choose not to act over fear of retaliation because you have a family to feed and a family to support, I'm willing to give you some slack on that and make some excuses for you because it's a shitty world and sometimes you have to do what's best for your family. But this guy is more or less in charge, right? He's at the top branches of DC Entertainment with a couple of other people. There aren't too many people who can really speak up to him or get him.
Isn't he the chief creative officer or something like that? Like he's high.
Yeah, he is. And so if anybody's in a position to go to a director and tell him to stop doing something, it's him. It's John's. Maybe he had just given up because the movie was such a train wreck and he didn't care anymore and he just wanted it done and out the door. But that's not an excuse to let people be treated in an inappropriate way. Mm-hmm. But it's the only explanation I can think of that makes any sense. So yeah, that's the positive news note to move that we're onto now. Ray, do you want to talk about the boys?
No, Ryan should.
Oh, okay.
Sure. We'll keep it brief, but Amazon, I think, announced today that they're going to be releasing a Billy Butcher short film thing.
Probably like 45 minutes or...
Is that what it said? I didn't notice it.
Films usually run in between 45 minutes and an hour and a half now. Like hour and a half movies are considered short at this point.
Well, we're going to get a Billy Butcher something, some sort of media. alongside The Boys Season 2. It's unclear as to whether whatever they're releasing takes place before or after or what's going on. So I'm a little nervous that I'm going to watch it in the wrong order. So hopefully somebody comes out and says, you know, which direction to watch it in. But yeah, it's all centered around Carl Urban's character. If you haven't watched The Boys, you really should. I think it's mm-hmm. very true to the comics and enjoyable if you like the darker, more adult.
Cool. All right, well then we will take a short break, and when we come back we will discuss the DCEU, the good with the bad. All right, and we are back. Thank you for joining us. Today we are going to be talking about the DCEU, the good with the bad. Before we open that up, I just want to be clear on what the DCEU is for anybody who may not be clear. That consists of the following eight films: Man of Steel, Batman v Superman, Suicide Squad, Wonder Woman, Justice League, Aquaman, Shazam, and Harlequin and the Birds of Prey, or Birds of Prey and the Emancipation of Harlequin, whatever the title is of that film now. It does not include Joker. I think that's an important thing to note. And it, of course, will include future films. The Suicide Squad that James Gunn is doing, Wonder Woman 1984, Aquaman 2, the Trench film, Shazam 2, Black Adam, all of those films would be part of the DCEU. When those release. I guess the only two we really know for sure are Wonder Woman 1984 and The Suicide Squad. I still don't even really know if the Batman, the Robert Pattinson Batman, is technically DCEU or not. We might have to wait for Flashpoint to find that out. So how do you want to kick things off? Should we start chronologically? Do you want to start with good or bad stuff? Do you want to just take a general feel?
So the DCEU is fairly complicated because when it first started out, you know, they were doing their best to build a cinematic universe on top of Nolan's shoulders, even though Nolan didn't really want to be a part of it anymore. He wasn't creating a large franchise. He was just trying to make some Batman films, and he didn't even intend to make three at first. You know, that wasn't in the cards. So, and the first half of the DCEU is either underwhelming or mediocre or a slow or just plain bad. So I think like the latter half has been absolutely stellar and made up for that.
Ryan, what are your thoughts?
Rachel knows I'm going to disagree with part of that, at least.
Yeah. Well, I know you really enjoy Man of Steel.
I do really enjoy Man of Steel, and I will defend it. it wasn't perfect, right? I mean, I'm not going to be stupid about it, but I do think that Man of Steel was very good, especially considering it was a Zack Snyder film, and those aren't always great. Mm-hmm. It's a very mixed bag. I think it was better than BVS. I think it was better than Justice League. I mean, of the first half of the DCEU, other than Wonder Woman, I guess. But, I mean, Man of Steel is up there with Wonder Woman for me. I like it a lot. But yeah, I mean, for the most part, I will say for this episode, we did, my girlfriend and I did rewatch Suicide Squad because she hadn't seen it, and BVS Ultimate Cut. Because she hadn't seen that. She also hadn't seen Man of Steel, but it's not available on any streaming platform for whatever reason. So, but I will say that while we're discussing like these early films, watching the Ultimate Cut again, it did remind me how much better of a movie it was than the theatrical cut. I can definitely understand why they didn't release this. Zack Snyder, I love him. And I love a lot of his work, but there's so much going on and so much story to tell. He's just not good at condensing things and making them easily manageable. If they had released this film in theaters, they would have had to have an intermission because there was just so much happening and it was somewhat hard to keep track of. But overall, it did a much better job at explaining, you know, Lex Luthor's motivation. You got more Wonder Woman. You know, a lot of these things that we complained about in the theatrical cut, you got a lot more explanation for in the Ultimate Cut. And so if you're a fan of the DCEU and you were underwhelmed with BVS and you haven't seen the Ultimate Cut, you definitely should, because it adds like 30 or 40 minutes and it's all stuff that really makes it a better movie if you can sit through it.
Well, and one thing I want to point out, because you're making the Ultimate Cut sound like it's extremely long. It's only 1 minute longer than Endgame.
Yeah.
It felt much longer than Endgame.
It is a slower film, because that's just Snyder's style. No doubt. Pacing-wise, it's totally different. But, like, as far as, like, requiring an intermission or anything like that, I mean, it still doesn't reach extended cuts of Lord of the Rings levels. You know, it's basically Endgame, as far as length is concerned. But part of the issue there, of course, is don't bring Snyder in with a plan and then change that plan midway through, because it's just not going to be successful, right? When Man of Steel went out and it did what it did and it was pretty successful, they gave him a 5-movie arc to work with. They said, "Here's 5 movies, go make your stuff," and then they started whittling away what those films were. They combined mm-hmm. Justice League into 1 movie, for example, and nixed another one completely. And so you end up only getting 3 films instead of 5. Well, he has a story to tell, and he's damn if he's not going to try and do it anyway. But there's definitely, the DCEU is a complicated thing for sure. I'm curious, Ryan. So we rewatched some stuff as well, Ryan and I. We rewatched Birds of Prey, Shazam, Aquaman and Wonder Woman, which, you know, are arguably the 4 stronger films of the 8, with the exception of Man of Steel. How did you feel about rewatching Suicide Squad? Because we did that like maybe 6 months ago.
How did I feel rewatching it? I mean, it wouldn't have been my choice to rewatch personally, but you know, it was still not good. There was good moments in it. You know, I really like the moment with Deadshot and Batman and his daughter. That was good. You know, the Harley stuff, she's like a totally different character in Birds of Prey. And you guys know, if you watch the show, that I'm not a Harley fan in general, but that I found the Birds of Prey Harley to be much more tolerable and borderline enjoyable for me at many points. than her version in Suicide Squad, which I just found to be grating every time she talked. And Leto's Joker. I mean, if there was one thing that I would say I'm not looking forward to if we get to Air Cut, it's more Leto's Joker, because he was similar to Harley. I just found him grating and annoying in general. And also the scene with the knives. Like, did he spend like 6 hours arranging knives and like baby clothes in a circle before he laid down in the middle, just because like this is how crazy the Joker is? He has all his free time. I don't know. There's a lot of stupid decisions in that movie. The makeup holds up, though, that it won an Oscar for. I'll say that was great.
So earlier, just to clarify, I want to specifically like break down what I was calling underwhelming. I didn't ever think that Man of Steel was bad. I thought it ended on a very dark note to start your whole franchise on. And but I loved Henry Cavill. I still do. He is my ideal Superman, you know, just in every aspect.
He is so good. I tell you what, that court scene in BVS, it's still one of my favorite scenes in the entire DCEU. Watching him walk down the halls and then come up the middle of that courtroom, his suit and him, just his physicality in the suit is the epitome of Superman for me. There's nothing that I could ever see topping that.
And in BVS, I thought his character was a lot more well-rounded. They gave him more stuff to do, and he was a bit cheerier. And
dealing with some fucked up stuff, like the absolutely. Whole world hates him, and he's, yeah, it was a lot.
Yeah, so I do know that the box office and critic reviews was pretty underwhelming for Man of Steel. They expected things to be a lot higher based on the last Dark Knight. But it was probably because of how bad Dark Knight Rises was that Man of Steel didn't do as well. The BVS, the final edit, is very convoluted. I think some parts, especially...
The theatrical cut, you mean?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think Lex Luthor was miscast. Jesse Eisenberg is not a bad actor, but that role was just not made for him. And he played it was weird and not in a, hey, this works.
This reminded me, rewatching that reminded me how little I liked his character.
Yeah.
I don't know that I agree that he's the problem with it, though, because I think he is a good enough actor where he could.
Well, she said he's a good actor. She didn't.
I know, but what I mean is I don't think the casting's the problem. I think it's the way the character was written that's the problem. Because, you know, it's not really Lex, it's his son, and he's not like this super, this hyper-intelligent, like, business, you know, entrepreneur guy. He's like this weaselly little creepy kid. Like,
if he's beyond that. He's like, he has some sort of issue.
Yeah, but that's how it was written, right? So, like, I'm not sure that the blame is on Eisenberg. I think the blame is on the character.
Okay, so there's a decent amount of affectations he adapted as an actor that just didn't work for me. Specifically, I know this is a really, you know, low-hanging grapes thing, but the Jolly Rancher scene, and like he puts his finger in the dude's mouth, like that is all actor's choice. I bet you anything it just says Lex has Jolly Ranchers and offers to a weird glasses guy. So
yeah, like I said, I watched this with my girlfriend. It was her first time watching this. And so when we got to that scene, I was kind of watching to see how she reacted to it. And the look on her face was like super uncomfortable. Why is this happening?
And Lex is supposed to make you feel uncomfortable, but not like that. You're supposed
it's the wrong
to
guy.
Feel scared in his presence. Like at any moment, he could have you killed. Truth be told, Matthew Good, who played Ozymandias in Watchmen, would have, like, that character, that version, should have been Lex Luthor. Like, yes. Ozymandias was supposed to be a joyous, happy guy. You're supposed to think throughout the entire movie he's the good guy. And as soon as Matthew Good walks on set, you're like, oh, that fucker's
that's the
up
bad
to
guy.
No good.
Yeah, it did not work like it did in the graphic novel.
But, you know, if he had stepped out and been Lex Luthor, that would have been something. Giancarlo Esposito, who plays him on Harley Quinn, perfect casting, could have been Lex Luthor there.
I still think Michael Rosenbaum is probably the best Lex Luthor for me. I think he's so he nailed good. It. Yeah.
Live action. Yeah.
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 Mm-hmm. I've never really been happy with any of the movie Lex Luthors, to be completely honest. But I think BVS suffers from having too much stuff in the pot. I think it tried to be a ton of different things, and that there's a lot of issues with that. Snyder is not blameless, of course. You know, he did write and direct it, but of course everything's going to suffer with studio involvement and constant rewrites and just everybody having their own opinion.
And he gets a lot more screen time in the Ultimate Cut too, which yes. is, I mean, he needed that to be fleshed out more because it didn't work in the theatrical cut. You didn't really know, like, it didn't seem like he was really doing anything. And then at the end, he's like, I did everything, and that's it. in the Ultimate Cut, you get a lot more of that. But on the downside, it's Jesse Eisenberg's Lex Luthor. So you kind of have to deal with this weird, like, kid that is doing some sort of shtick that you can't really figure out the whole time. But it did advance the overall plot better than it did in the theatrical cut. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, it's just that small downside of having to see the actor more.
As a small note, if anyone wants to watch the Ultimate Cut because they haven't, that is available now on HBO Max. They've added that version of the film, so you can do that. So the next movie up then was Wonder Woman, which, at least from my perspective, seem to be like a ray of hope that this franchise was going to move in the right direction.
Yeah.
Right up until the end.
Well, so let's talk about that, because we just rewatched it. It was not as bad actually as I remembered it. And I think there's really just a very simple problem with the end of the movie.
David Thewlis.
Yeah, the mustache guy is Ares.
Well, I don't have a problem with him being Ares in disguise. But once he reveals himself and they're about to fight, he needs to physically change very quickly. And that does not happen. And that's the problem. I think he's a great undercover, covert, evil Ares. I like that. I think that works. Because I don't think you suspect it. But he never changes. And that is not really believable. That doesn't really work for me.
Yeah, you're telling me that the literal god of war looks like that guy. That's a tough sell.
Man, every statue of every god looks like they were just the most attractive person ever. And nothing against David Thewlis. I'm sure he's very well loved, but, you know, it's the DCEU. We've seen these gorgeous people in these roles. Henry Cavill is like perfection of man, and Gal Gadot is literally the most beautiful woman ever. Ever. So, you know, you got to have somebody that can stand up to that as well.
Yeah, it's a tough sell for sure. I mean, he's not a Greek god.
No. He is a werewolf Hogwarts professor. You will not convince me otherwise.
That's at best. I mean.
But at the end of the day, though, that's really my only problem standing with the movie. There's some
bad Dr. Poison. Or whatever her name was.
I don't really have a problem with her.
Okay. I did not find her to be a compelling villain at all.
No,
she's like a side character, really.
She's like a mustache twirling villain without a mustache. And, you know, like the, oh, look at my half mask. I'm so evil. You know, and then you don't, like, okay.
My thing is with her, you don't get any background as to why she wants to destroy people so much.
There's no motivation, right? What's the motivation? Because she fucked up half her face? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, and that's the problem there too, is you assume that it was an accident in the lab or something, that she did it to herself. And it would be much more interesting if you find out that it was like purposely done to her by her parents or something, and she grew up wanting revenge, or like she just could have been much more fleshed out as an offshoot. I don't really think about her honestly. Like, the best parts about Wonder Woman are Wonder Woman and Steve Trevor.
Yeah, well, we're discussing the bad stuff. So yeah,
we always discuss the bad stuff. I wanted to talk a little bit about the good stuff.
Okay, well, the good.
I was just gonna say about Dr. Poison. I think
here we go.
No. I think I think one of the issues here is they decided to do this in World War I instead of World War II. If you do it World War II and she's a Nazi, nobody asks any questions. You can be that type of villain as a Nazi and it's just fine. But because it's pre-Nazi, then there has to be more motivation to it. And I think that's the risk they took making it World War One.
So something good for me about the movie,
I mentioned
the courthouse scene in the BVS as one of my favorite DCEU moments. One we got in this movie too that gave me literal chills seeing it in the theater was when she's crossing No Man's Land.
Oh God, I still tear up when I see that scene. I don't know why it's so emotional for me, but
it's amazing.
It is.
Just as soon as she starts walking up those the ladder, stairs, whatever it was, and taking off like the fur coat and full Wonder Woman warrior mode, crossing this you know, to this next trench, holding bullets back, leading the charge. Yeah, very emotionally charged and just visually stunning. If I didn't know that it was Patty Jenkins, I would have guessed it was Zack Snyder because it looked like a comic book panel. That's something he's really good at. And yeah, I mean, it was a gorgeous, gorgeous scene.
To think that that was filmed in post and she was 5 months pregnant doing all that, it wasn't included in the original script is like insane, because that is the best scene in the whole movie in my opinion.
Yeah, I think I would have enjoyed the movie much less. It wouldn't be nearly as high on my list if it didn't have that moment, because that moment really pulled everything together. It kind of like was the linchpin for the movie, and it's really where you get, I think it's like the first time you really get to see Wonder Woman doing her Wonder Woman thing and being a badass. I mean, you get to see some of it on Themyscira, and it's been a minute since I've seen the movie, so maybe I'm wrong on that, but that was like the first time you really get to see her showing her powers to the world.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in any real combat, yeah, because on Themyscira, when she's fighting, it's all training.
Yeah.
Right, because when the Germans show up to get and fight on the beach, she doesn't do a whole lot in that scene. I think she's like kind of taken off guard, but it's all sparring other than that. So this is huge, because after she crosses No Man's Land, then they have the fight in the village, which mm-hmm. shows off her speed and all of those different, those slow motion fight scenes and stuff where she slides across the floor and everything. I think it's just all shot really well. And the score just really helps solidify all of that. Definitely my favorite chunk of sequences in the movie is through the end of that fight.
Agreed.
The entire middle act of Wonder Woman is so strong.
Mm-hmm.
It's just wonderful.
It is.
Yeah, I agree. I do like all of the sparring stuff that happens on Themyscira, because like these women are all just absolutely incredible, and it's really cool watching them.
Some of those women are in their like 50s and 60s, and they still pulled off like more than half of their own stunts. So I definitely don't want to take anything away from Themyscira. It's amazing.
And I like the costumes. Like, I know people like to cosplay Wonder Woman, and that's great, but her costume before she gets the actual Wonder Woman costume, I think looks really cool, too. I think it looks great, and I'd like to see more people try to do that.
A lot of the Amazon's outfits looked really great.
That's fair, yeah. And Robin Wright is just so cool. She is just so awesome during her time in the movie. So, you know. I guess we should have had like a spoiler warning for all of this stuff. I don't know if that was implied.
Oops. Okay. In all fairness, we have covered the majority of these movies already in episodes. That's Man true. Of Steel has been the only one that released before we started the podcast.
True.
So next up we have Justice League. I don't really have a lot of positive things to say about Justice League.
No.
Like at all, I can't.
No.
Yeah, I don't think we need to spend too much time on Justice League. I think that most everything has been talked about to death, either by us or other people. And you know, it's not a good movie. There weren't really any scenes that made me go, "Wow!" You know, like Wonder Woman and BVS, I've mentioned, both had scenes like that. This movie had zero. That it is what it is. There's a lot of drama surrounding it. So, I mean, if there's stuff you guys want to talk about, that's fine. But I don't think we need to spend a ton of time on it.
What was your least favorite parts?
Oh, Jesus.
So for me, my least favorite parts were that Russian family that they had to randomly keep saving while the world was ending and they were fighting Steppenwolf. It just,
that is
like,
such a stupid Whedon move. He always puts like a random extra as important, like high on a pedestal, and you have to like them for some reason, or else you won't get the gravity of the situation. And it's just not true.
I mean, I'd say for me, there's so much bad. I mean, from the Cavill mustache removal and everything else. But if we're talking like scene, I think probably similar to Derek's, like the Flash and Superman like racing to save this family. And then like Superman, like Flash is doing his Flash thing, and then Superman just like flies by and like waves at him while carrying a house on his hand or whatever. I thought that was so stupid, and I really hated it.
What about you, Ray?
Probably the complete difference in Batman's character from BVS to Justice League. And we're supposed to believe that like it's because he feels really bad Superman's dead, but he didn't really know him all that much, and all of a sudden he goes from this like hulking, dark, brooding badass to this whiny simp of a man, and it just seems so out of character for any Batman. Like Batman has dark times, absolutely, and he is more often than not a sad, depressed man, but he's never pitiful,
right?
And I just felt like it was played so poorly. So
that's fair.
I don't think it's Affleck's fault either.
No, I don't think
that he did. He hated this stuff.
Yeah, I will flat out say, yeah.
In our chat, somebody said that the slow side eye from Supes in the fight where he's single-handedly beating the whole league was a fun moment. He's asked why I don't like that moment, so I'm just going to throw this out there because I don't want to type it out. I don't like that moment. If you didn't watch our review, I don't like that moment because basically at that moment, Superman becomes more powerful than literally anybody in the league. He's literally holding like three of them back with one hand, and that's showing how much stronger he is than everybody else. But then not only that, they also show that he's as fast or faster than the Flash because he's able to watch the Flash run. And, you know, if he was just stronger than everybody else, then that's fine. It's Superman, right? He's super strong. That's one of his gimmicks. But being super fast, faster than a character that's only really known for his speed, that's his whole thing, is just push that over the edge for me as far as like why even have the rest of the Justice League, because Superman literally does everything better than everybody.
I mean, at the end of the day, Flash is supposed to be faster than Superman. You know who else is faster than Superman? Supergirl is faster than Superman, so he's not even top two.
You know who's even supposed to be a better fighter than Superman? Wonder Woman, right? Like all these things that they just made Superman better than everybody's thing. He's probably better at hacking than Cyborg. I don't know. It's just like, I wouldn't have surprised me if they had thrown something like that in there, because there's no point to any of the rest of the league.
Yep.
Yes. No, I'm with you. And I try and come up with things I like about it. And like the only thing I can think of is like, I like that these characters got to share a screen together. But like, is that even enough for this movie to exist? You know? So that's why I'm looking forward to the Snyder Cut, because I can't imagine it's worse. It's got to be an improvement.
Yeah, I hope. I will say, if I had to find something I liked the flashback scene to where they're showing the mother boxes and stuff. I thought that was cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, so then we have Aquaman. Aquaman is a very different kind of movie, really, for the DCEU. It feels a lot more Marvel than the other DCEU films. It's very bright. It's in fact everything that takes place near Atlantis is like straight from Tron, including the music, and I love that. What do you guys think about Aquaman? Where does it land for you guys? Good, bad, in between?
No, I think Aquaman's a good film. I don't think it is like anything super stellar, but it continued the upward trend of good films from DCEU. So I enjoyed a lot of it. I loved Jason Momoa. He's just a different Aquaman than anything I grew up with. And Aquaman being one of my favorite superheroes, that's so much fun. I love when characters get reinvented. And like, we just watched it on Sunday. Derek watched more of it than me. But I think it holds up, and they were able to do the thing with multiple villains and it didn't get overstuffed. I think the only weak part is Amber Heard's Mira. I think she's super forgettable.
I wish she was super forgettable, because that's now a downside of the movie for maybe, just based on her behavior outside of the film.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
they may be forced to replace her, depending on how things go. Yeah, I'm with you. I think the movie is quite beautiful. I think Atlantis is gorgeous. I think a lot of the special effects, I mean, this movie is incredibly special effects heavy. So much of this is VFX, especially compared to the other films, that I think they do a really good job more often than not with that. I wonder, do you guys think at any point he'll lose his hand?
I mean, that was a really cool arc in the comic books, so I hope so, but I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think it could just be a huge badass thing to do. And if an elderly Walking Dead actor can go a season and a half with, you know, his foot taped up in green screen tape, I think Momoa could do it. But between the creating the hand out of water and then the giant fish hook, like, it was a cool thing in the comics. They could totally do it and it would be awesome. They could also skip it and I think I'd be fine, but missed opportunity.
That's fair. That's fair. You know, I guess for me, what is kind of interesting is the suit that he ends up with, because I didn't think that there was any way to make that look cool, but I think they did. I mean, the gold plated suit and everything, I think looks awesome.
Yeah. And he rocks it. Like, there's no way anybody could have predicted that he would have looked amazing in that classic suit, but he did. And honestly, I think the whole thing is a giant fun FU to the terrible reputation Aquaman got from Super Friends.
I agree. And I think that's why they took Aquaman in like such a different direction, was to make as much separation there as possible and then throw this in as like, look, we can still do it and make it at least be cool looking. So I like that. In chat, Chris said that he liked that they didn't kill off any of the villains. And, you know, that's a good point. One of the problems with a lot of superhero movies is that they just kill off all of these villains and you can never bring them back, no matter how good they were, unless you have to do some convoluted stuff like Loki. So, yeah, I'm really glad that they're alive. And they, I mean, I assume will come back if the series gets to continue.
Yeah, Aquaman for me is fine. Like, people liked it a lot more than I did. I liked it better than like BVS, and Justice League, obviously, but it was not nearly as high on my list. I don't know. It just felt like very generic in a lot of ways. Like you said, more Marvel-y, but I feel like the DC EU shouldn't feel like Marvel. Wonder Woman didn't feel like a Marvel movie. So I don't know. It was fine. It's not at the bottom of my list, but it's probably closer to the middle than the top.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, for me, I think it sits at number 4, I think, of 8, maybe 5, depending on the day.
It's probably in that vicinity for me too.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, so then we move on to Shazam, which maybe I'm just really biased for because it takes place in Philly, and I love Zachary Levi so, so much. But I really love this movie, and I love pretty much everything about this movie. What about you guys?
Yeah. That movie is so enjoyable from start to finish. It, part of me, like I said this while we were rewatching, the only thing I wish is that they would have leaned really heavy into like rated R villains, but still had like a PG hero. Because that is the world of Billy Batson. So that's literally my only criticism. The soundtrack is fantastic. Levi is great. Mark Strong is wonderful. It's Asher Angel is really good. Like, it's just so, so great.
Yeah, all the kid actors are... I have a problem with kid actors in general. If you watch this show, you know that. But I thought they were all great. I didn't have any issue with any of them. And then when, spoiler alert, the end happens and there's adult versions of all of them, those guys are all great and gals are all great too. So, yeah, I mean, I feel like for me, that movie is probably it's close to the top because it, depending on the day of the week, it's probably at the top or, in, you know, it switches with a couple other movies occasionally. But, I mean, it's very good. It's very positive. The message is good. You know, the colors are good. Like Rachel said, the soundtrack is good. The location is good. It's just a lot of positive in the movie. If I had to like nitpick at something, it would be the Superman cameo because the suit looked like a Ruby's costume and it clearly wasn't Henry Cavill. It was a fun idea that I wish they had just gotten Henry Cavill for because that would have made it much better. But yeah, that even that's like being, that's a stretch because Zachary Levi is just a joy to watch.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you on that. I think it's so odd that they couldn't get Cavill to come on set for 10 minutes to do that. It's such a weird situation because they wrote themselves into that corner. And they didn't need to do it if Cavill wasn't available. You still had Shazam show up for the lunch and the kid gets his day and everything. But yeah, I mean, the casting across the board, though, in this movie is wonderful. Even the foster parents are just great. I think it's just perfect. Everywhere. The only thing that maybe I would add is I would have liked to see a little more differentiation on the sins themselves. There's a few moments where they get a little blobby moving around, and I think having them a little more clear cut would have been good, or maybe even having some practical components for close-up shots instead of it all being CGI would have been good. But it was a tighter budget than some of the bigger films. And like Aquaman, the villain is kept alive, and so they can always bring back Mark Strong, as everyone should always do. So,
for sure.
Any other thoughts on Shazam? We talked through that one kind of quick.
Well, I mean, there's just not much bad to critique.
Yeah.
It's all just the good. It's the good, you know, with the bad on the DCEU. It's the good side. So
I will say I'm impressed that, like, when they had the whole Shazamily together in costume, like, they all looked so great.
They did.
It's a cool ass scene when you see them all together for the first time. Yeah.
Yeah. That scene always gets me. It's just so good. All right. Well, then that brings us to the final film that's out, which is Birds of Prey, Harlequin and the Birds of Prey, whatever title it's officially under nowadays. And I mean, personally, I think this movie is pretty fantastic too. I like pretty much everything in this one as well for different reasons. It's obviously more adult. It's not as fun of a film, but the action sequences are really good. The soundtrack is really good. And I think, you know, seeing Gotham in daylight is really weird.
We reviewed this back in February. It was our last movie review. So I don't have too much more to add. The second viewing, there was a lot of fun Easter eggs in the background that I got to notice. It was also some really cool, deeper little symbolism to things. And I love that. Just doesn't have to be in your face. It's just little things here and there. So love that. Giant fan. I want to see where these characters go. If that's in another movie, great. If that's in two separate movies, cool. Both are great.
Yeah, I didn't rewatch it like you guys did, although I do want to. I think I stand by the action sequences in this movie being some of the best in the DCU.
So good.
I mean, some of it doesn't make a lot of sense, but it is very well choreographed. The scene in the police station with Harley Quinn comes into mind. That whole sequence, as someone who considers himself a choreography and action scene enthusiast, I did greatly enjoy that. And then the scene at the end with all the birds and everybody fighting in the fun house was also really great. So that's, you know, movies like John Wick, same choreographers, but you know, those kind of movies, even if there's not a lot of substance to the movie, if it's the action is really good, then I'll give it a lot of a pass on being not as much substance to the story. And I think this movie was a lot of that, but I'm okay with that. I hope that the DCEU goes forward with the same choreographers for any of the movies that require people to be good martial artists and good fighters, because it was exceptional.
Yeah. No, I'm with you there for sure. To Ray's point, I would actually like to see the Birds of Prey do their own thing, and then have Harley have her own thing, either with the Suicide Squad or whatever, because I just think that Harley is the type of character that just kind of steals the spotlight, and I think that the Birds of Prey have a good opportunity to be their own thing.
Yeah, this Black Canary was great. I loved her very much. Really, Huntress was great too. I liked all of the Birds of Prey in this movie, and I think, yeah, if anything, yeah, I don't want to say Harley was a detriment to this movie, because she really wasn't, but yeah, I would love to see them split off and have Harley Quinn be the introduction for maybe the anti-heroes of the DCEU, you know, have her team up with a different group next time, and, you know, she could just keep branching off and starting all these different vigilante groups in Gotham and surrounding cities.
Absolutely good with that. Harley, we've seen her character truly improve over the last couple of years with Birds of Prey, and then of course the Harley Quinn cartoon. And she just, now that women know how to play her as something different than what Arlene Sorkin did, she goes well with so many different groups that if she sticks around with just one thing, like, she's not a team player. She's bouncing from click to click, and she goes where she needs to go, kind of thing, or where she wants to go. She doesn't stick with people because of any loyalty. So I think it totally makes sense for her to be in a couple different movies with a few different people, and you know, kind of like Ryan said, start off other vigilante films.
Agreed. The one criticism that I really have of the movie, and someone brought this up in chat, is the Cassandra Cain character, because she could just be somebody else. The character itself is fine, but it just doesn't need to be Cassandra Cain. It does feel like a waste of an existing character that, you know, should be pretty different.
Yeah, we could talk about a lot about that on our review of the movie.
Did we?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm a little concerned about the future of Harley Quinn, because I know that she shows up in the next Suicide Squad movie. I hope that James Gunn is smart enough to not revert the character development that she's got back to a more original Suicide Squad Harley Quinn instead of Birds of Prey Harley Quinn.
Yeah.
That would really bother me, but, you know, we'll see.
Yeah, we will indeed.
I hope, if theaters ever open up again.
Well,
that would be nice.
If they're closed too long, maybe they'll start releasing these big ones to HBO Max.
But then I can't watch them with you guys.
No, that's true.
Yeah, it is sad when that happens.
It's a huge bummer.
We can do a Zoom party and just press play at the same time.
There you go. That's what, see, there's Netflix party. Now, like, we need HBO Max parties.
That's right.
Yeah. So we kind of burned through these 8 movies pretty quick. You know, it's a lot of ground to cover. Is there anything else you guys think is important to note before we wrap things up?
The DCEU is a freaking mess, and they need to, like, get one person, like, they're Kevin Feige in creative control of everything. And
yeah, he may not be perfect, but he also keeps things consistent.
Things are more cohesive in the Marvel side, even with, you know, more than twice the amount of movies. So they just really need one voice that nobody's going to be like, no, you can't do that. He's the final word. That's it.
Yep.
That's what they need. And I don't think they had that. I think they wanted Geoff Johns to be that, but that's not really working out for them.
I think they're finding their way. You know, if you look at the movies chronologically, you know, there's three, you know, bad to mediocre films, right? And then 5 that are, you know, good to better. And the last 3 have been good. I think really it took them some time to figure things out.
That's not the problem, though. The problem is tying them in together.
Yeah. Sorry, our dog is barking all of a sudden. I agree with you that that's certainly something they're not good at. I don't know that they need to be that good at it all the time. I think that having the last three basically be like these standalone films is probably the best thing the DCEU could have done at this point. And I think having Wonder Woman and be her own thing in 84 is also a good decision to kind of get these characters solidified so people want to see them on the big screen. I think one of the issues with Justice League is that nobody really cared about that version of Flash, Aquaman, or Cyborg because we hadn't seen them yet. You know, and now at least people know who Aquaman is. They know who Shazam is, and they have reasons to want to go see them again.
And it's a bigger deal when they all team up.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
It's true.
The huge problem with the DCEU is they tried to blow their load so soon. They didn't have a decent buildup. Now, I'm not saying you have to follow Marvel's plan where you need like 8 films before these people can cross over, but you got to make us care about characters or it's not exciting.
Yeah, give us some foreplay, Warner Brothers. We can't, mm-hmm. you can't just dive right in, right? You gotta warm up the oven a little bit, you know. Give it a little rub, a little lick, you know. You gotta do what you gotta do, and
wow,
yeah. You just I'm being very visual, but it's true. You've got to lead up to these things.
A few years ago, I thought it could be done because these characters are iconic. The lineup they're using is a pretty general lineup of Justice League members, and I thought they could do a Justice League movie without having to introduce everybody on their own, and I don't know if just that concept is wrong or just Warner Brothers wasn't the group to do it, but it clearly didn't work.
No, I think it's because it all matters who plays them. Ezra Miller's Flash is not Grant Gustin's. It's not Nolan North or whatever. It's not any of the animated versions. It's not John Wesley Shipp. So you have to care about the actor who's doing it too. That's important.
For sure.
Yeah, that's fair. So of course we have Wonder Woman 1984 that's slated to release this year. Its release date's moved around a couple of times because of the pandemic. And then the Suicide Squad and the Batman are both deep into production as well. So we should be seeing them probably next year, depending on when production can resume and theaters open back up.
The Batman production has already resumed.
Did they already resume? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there you go. So then maybe we'll get 2 movies next year. I guess we'll have to kind of see what happens. And then that Black Adam movie, right?
That's mm-hmm. gonna happen. That's happening.
You know, right sure. around the time we get Flashpoint. all right. Well, then that's going to be it for us this week, everybody. Thank you, of course, for tuning in. Do we know what we're covering next week?
Yes, we are.
Suburban Commando, isn't it? Or
we are watching, we are reviewing Dick Tracy for its 30th anniversary.
Oh, I thought we got rid of that one for Suburban Commando.
I'm so excited.
We also got rid of Ray the Host.
We should probably just watch both else. just in case.
Look, Ryan. We'll find a spot for Suburban Commando. Okay.
Oh yes, will Ray be involved? Because I need her to be involved. That's
can't like promise.
No, I need that. I need it in my life.
We'll talk about that offline.
Okay. Ray's frozen. I think her screen is frozen. I don't.
Nope, oh, there that's we go. Just nope. my face. Okay. It's just my face.
All right, so next week, Dick Tracy. I'm super stoked about that because
is that really on streaming that. Networks anywhere?
It is. It's on HBO Max.
Okay.
Yeah. So that'll be next week for us. So please go ahead and watch that if you'd like to join us. You can join us live Tuesday night at 9 Eastern, 8 Central, facebook.com/group/screenheroes. Please join us. We do this live. We talk and chat during it. We do tons of posts and polls and brackets. We're doing an X-Men movie bracket right now, which is going really well. So thank you to everybody who has voted and participated in that. Ryan, if people want to reach out to you, or if you want to tell people what it is that you do when you're not podcasting, go right ahead.
If you want to reach out to me, you can find me at Buster Props on the things.
On the things. Ray, what about you?
I'm Siren Ray. All day, every day.
And I'm the Star Trek dude. You can also find me on the Gamer Heroes podcast, the video game podcast here on the Heroes Podcast Network. This week's episode actually had my old co-host and Ryan's business partner at Buster Props, John, joined me. So
my little brother.
Right. Snake, also known as Snake Plissken, a.k.a. Snake Plissken.
Oh, man.
It's true. That's his name, guys.
So we talked about the Resident Evil game franchise, not the movies. But you can check us out there. Of course, we are Screen Heroes at Screen Heroes Pod on Twitter. You can find us at heroespodcasts.com. And the show is available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Spreaker, Podcast Addict, and more. As always, if you leave us a review somewhere, let us know. We will give you a shout out on the show and probably read that review right here on the show. Thanks for tuning in. We'll catch you next week.